Well, Verity, I'm Rick Dancer. Welcome to this edition of Get Real with Rick Dancer. We got a great show for you today. On this episode, we're going to be talking about mental health. And the backstory is, I do podcasting, and a gentleman wrote me and said, my kid's works out in the hinterlands of Oregon, and he's working with cops. He's working with all kinds of people on mental health issues. We've been talking on the show a lot, especially on our TikTok show, a lot about mental health. And then I listened to a podcast this morning and it got me thinking. So this could go in a whole different direction than any of you expect, but we're going to have a conversation about mental health and what that means. We do this because of sponsors like Chris Dental Family Dentistry, where your civil liberties matter. He believes in taking care of your dental health so that you can go out and take care of your community, watch your government, make sure that people are doing what they're supposed to do. And that I love this because, this lady on this podcast today said, people should just start being who they are and quit dinking around with trying to impress people and making them think you're somebody. And that is Dr. Bratlin to a T. Also, Albert Taylor Endless Possibilities. They work with people with different abilities in our community to make sure that they have the lives that they deserve and want. Another sponsor, New Leaf Hyperbarics and Wellness Center. They offer massage, they offer light therapy, and they offer hyperbarics, which is just high doses of oxygen where you come out of there feeling as high as a kite, but you haven't smoked anything except oxygen. Rain Heating and Air Conditioning at Presswell. One of our new sponsors, they called up and said, we love what you do. We want to sponsor you. I love those kind of sponsors. You don't have to agree with everything we say on here. In fact, you shouldn't agree with everything I say on here. You should have your own opinion and learn to use it. Also, Montana Oral Surgeons and Dental Implant Center. They have centers in Great Falls, Montana, Butte, Montana, Bozeman, Montana, and Helena, Montana. They do facial surgeries, oral surgeries, remove teeth, put in implants, all that kind of stuff. And Greg Hinkle from Fairway Independent Mortgage Company. If you're looking to move from Oregon, Washington, Montana, Idaho, there's all these little special rules. You know how legislators are. They create little laws and rules that nobody can live up to. And we don't even know they exist until you find a realtor or you've bought a home and you find out, oh, I need to do what? Well, Greg can keep you from making those mistakes. He's a great guy and very knowledgeable about what he does. He's also a former Oregonian who became a Montanan. So there's a bunch of us out here. Okay, let's bring the bearded social worker on. Dude, Okay, this is Brandon Miller. And so Brandon, when I first saw your name and then, you know, you started emailing me back, well, the first came back as Brandon Miller and then Brandon Miller. And then it came back on another site that was the bearded social worker. And I was like, this is so awesome. I like the whole idea of a bearded social worker. So where are you?
So I'm up in Northeast Oregon, so kind of the Northeast corner between Idaho, Washington, and Oregon, and a small community called Wallowa County.
Oh, it's the best. It is that and French Glen area are my two favorite parts of Oregon. My wife and I have been there a dozen times. I love the people. Are you in Enterprise? Are you in Wallowa?
I'm in Enterprise. Enterprise okay. Proper. Yep.
So if you guys don't know where that is, Enterprise is like 4 or 5 miles from Joseph, Oregon. I'm sure you all know where that is. If that doesn't make sense to you, he's probably about 20 miles from the big metropolis of Imnaha, which everybody knows where Imnaha. I mean, if you don't know where Imnaha is, you know, I don't know what I can say for you. So tell people a little bit about what it is that you do. And then we're going to talk mental health. And I know you do special work with police officers as well. So kind of explain to people what you do.
So my educational background, I have a master's in social work out of Boise State University. Licensure wise, I'm a licensed clinical social worker. And I'm also a licensed drug and alcohol counselor here in Oregon. And so basically as a social worker, you can do all kinds of things. I focus on individual counseling and therapy with individual work and group, things like that most commonly. So I've been doing this for about the last 5 years. Before that, I worked at a adult mental health facility with you know, people with real severe mental illness. So I've been in this industry for about 14 years. And so kind of recently went out on my own as a private practice. So the Bearded Social Worker, and is the name of my private practice. And so doing lots of different types of work under that.
So what do you, why do you do this? I mean, I know right now, I mean, mental illness and mental health have been a thing for the beginning of time, but all of a sudden it's really more, it's being more talked about, which I think is healthy.
Yeah, it's a good thing. So I do it ever since I can remember. I've always had a care and concern for other people. Like even back in like elementary school, always, you know, see a kid by himself, I'd go over and talk with them. Just kind of always had that personality. And so career-wise, I've always just been drifted more towards jobs that or have more of a output of caring towards people, helping people improve and grow.
And so what are you seeing? What are the trends? What are you seeing happening? Are you seeing more people coming forward? Are you seeing, you know, what kind of drug and alcohol becoming a worse problem in Oregon?
Oh, that's a whole nother topic. But yeah, it definitely is. More people are coming forward. And I think part of that is it's more accessible than before. Insurance companies are paying more reasonably. Before, oftentimes insurance companies wouldn't pay much at all for mental health or addiction services. So that's helping more people be able to come in. And also it's just being more talked about. And, you know, you see this in on the broader spectrum when you, with like celebrities and sports athletes, you know, coming forward and like kind of talking about their illness, you know, and so I think it's just becoming more commonly discussed. I also think that especially in substance use, you know, Oregon recently passed Measure 110, I believe, 111, which basically decriminalized all substances. And so within a certain volume for personal use, which, you know, has just personally, I've just seen a lot more increase in overdoses. There's been a lot more increase in DUIs. There's been more increases in lots of drug related charges. And part of that is just, there's just still a shortfall in providers that can provide treatment for these folks. And so we're definitely seeing more of that in the field as well.
Now, even in Wallowa, because Wallowa County, I mean, you guys only have, I think there's only one stoplight in the whole county.
None. We have no, they're trying to put one in an Enterprise. And
yeah. And people, I remember there was a book out a few years ago called The Shack, and it was written by a guy, a really good book written by a gentleman in Milwaukee, Oregon. And after I read the book, I wrote him and just kiddingly said, you know, I only found one mistake that you made is that the accident happened at a traffic light in Wallowa County. And there isn't one. I mean, but who would even think that you could, that there would be a county in the world that didn't have a traffic light? You know what I mean?
Yeah, we're still considered a frontier community. So it's pretty small.
So what's most of the stuff you're seeing people deal with mental health wise in rural or super rural Oregon?
I would say, you know, and it's changed a lot. You know, the whole landscape of wellness has changed significantly in these past 3-4 years. And, you know, you don't get to go through a pandemic and all the stresses and all the chaos that happened as a result of that without coming out of it either stressed or depressed or anxious or, you know, all kinds of different things. And so seeing a big increase in anxiety amongst people in depression are probably the biggest ones. And really just anxiety about the world outside of their control, like not even their job, not necessarily relationship, but just the news and everything that's happening worldwide. Has really increased a lot of anxiety in people. But also just, it seems like there's been a shift in resiliency of people and just what they're able to handle and manage.
Is that, I'm guessing since the pandemic, you've seen a lot of that.
Yes.
People just out, because we're no longer in control of our own lives. Someone else, the government was taking control of our lives. It felt.
Yeah. Well, in a lot of ways it was. And it just seemed like shift. You see it in the workforce, like everybody can't find employees. There's like in my profession, it's insane how many positions they have opening at pretty much every clinic across the state. And before the pandemic, a lot of positions were pretty well filled. And so there's just even in the workforce, you're seeing a resiliency where people don't want to go back to work. They're impacted by that. They're just less capable, it seems like, in a lot of ways. And so more things feel overwhelming to them now that I would say 4 years ago probably wouldn't have been the case.
I don't know if you can answer this, or I mean, not that you, and if you can't, just tell me no, but do you think this was something that was not considered very well, at the mental, the lockdown, what it did mentally mm-hmm. to people, I don't think was, in my own opinion, I don't think it was taken into consideration when it was, you know, it's just bam, here we go. And what you did to people, it lingers.
I would agree. I don't think it was taken into consideration, at least not, you know, they had to weigh out lots of things. And I don't think mental health was really the focus or concern. But you know, when you focus on one thing and it's like all the energy got put into physical side of health and things like that, and that passes that somewhere and where you saw it, you know, initially people were very resilient. There was this whole movement of like, hey, we're going to get through this together. Let's come together. Let's unite. And then that shifted pretty quickly to there. I saw on TV where there's like phone numbers that you can call and report people who were not abiding by these standards. And all of a sudden, I'm like, hey, I thought we were in this together. Now it's turning your neighbor mentality. And it quickly shifted. And as a result, I think we're seeing this aftermath that kind of happened probably about 2 years ago is when you really see it start increasing in numbers of depression, anxiety, people coming in for services. There's a diagnosis that is commonly given out. It's called adjustment disorder, which again, like it's, you know, things in life have adjusted and changed and shifted, and you're having a hard time adjusting to that change. And so that's a pretty common one. During the pandemic, I kind of half jokingly, half serious was like, there's going to be a new diagnosis in the DSM that's like post-pandemic disorder.
Right.
Because many, many, many people I talk to, whether they're getting services from me or just family, friends, et cetera, they are all kind of have very similar symptomology that kind of weren't there before the pandemic. And so I think it's one of those things that should be addressed. And we're now recognizing the effect of mental health that I don't think was predicted.
What do people do? What I mean, in terms of, you know, how do you talk someone through that?
So I think the big part where I first start in anything I do with anybody is finding out what in their life is blocking the things that they want to do. Because they're in seeing me because either they have a belief system that is leading them in a direction that's not positive for them, or whether it's their depression, anxiety, or just how they're adjusting to changes is keeping them from accomplishing things they want to accomplish, whether that's good relationships or successful in work or just not feeling exhausted all the time, whatever that looks like, then we navigate it from there. But a lot of it is identifying the things that are problematic to them. And then a lot of it is using different things. There's lots of different methods you can use, CBT, narrative therapy, EMDR, things like that are really effective to help kind of to shift our thinking around things. So the basis of CBT, which is a real commonly used treatment, is that you have a belief about something.
Okay.
That belief will then impact your... I have a dinging noise. I don't know what that is. I apologize, Rick.
Fine. No, I'm I think it's just God kissing me.
It is. So you have these beliefs, and those beliefs will then impact our feelings and emotions about stuff. And then our emotions drive behavior, and then our behavior will reinforce our belief. And that's kind of the cycle we go through life and how we make decisions. And so CBT will say, you know, either one, you work on changing your belief about something. And so like spiders, for example, if you believe spiders are dangerous and deadly and scary, your emotion's going to be fear and your behavior is going to be you squish the spider. And then that reinforces, hey, I killed it. I'm good. That thing was scary. And it reinforces your belief. If you have a different belief through education, knowledge, just things like that, that actually most spiders are not dangerous. They're not going to kill you. Then maybe your emotion is more disgust.
Okay.
And then your behavior then becomes more, let's shoot the spider outside, or let's, you know, ignore the spider, but you don't kill it. So it changes your behavior because your belief has changed. But from my view, beliefs are built from like a whole lifetime of how you were raised, how you're educated, all your ethos, everything about you creates your beliefs. That's really hard to change on anything on a meaningful level. So I approach it from a changing the behavior. That's one thing that out of all of these that you can just manually override your belief, you can manually override your emotion to produce a behavior that you want to see, even when it doesn't feel natural. And as you do that, then that behavior is not going to be in congruency with your belief.
And is so that, how do you rebuild resiliency in people?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Isn't that interesting?
And there are people that have written books on this. It's something that we talk about a lot.
Are you concerned with the lack of resiliency that you're seeing? I mean, especially, to me, and maybe this is just, and you can tell me, Rick, you're just full of crap and everything, but especially in rural America, where that seems like, especially when I'm not picking on people in Wallowa County. These are hardworking. A lot of people have two jobs to make a living. It's not like living in Beaverton, Oregon, near Portland, where you have all your services. I mean, rugged country and rugged individualists. And then when you're seeing the resiliency challenged post-pandemic, that's got to be concerning, because those people probably are born with more resiliency than a lot of people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, and it's a tough one to rebuild. And part of it, resiliency is really extending our coping abilities is how you build resiliency. Because the more resiliency you have, you can experience a lot of grief, you can experience a lot of turmoil, and still have these, I guess, facets of a resource that you can draw from. So if you have a lot of friends, a lot of good friends, not just like Facebook people, but like actual friends that you could call at like 2 a.m. if you're having a hard day, you have a reasonable finance, you have some sort of spiritual connection, those types of things, the more of that you have, the more you can withstand before you exceed your coping skills and your natural coping level. And so the problem with resiliency, what I've seen through COVID is, one, it's taken a huge financial hit, and now we're seeing this huge inflation, which is insane. So most people's financial resources are limited. Through COVID, there was a big push to don't be around anybody. And so what happened is a lot of these in-person, really close relationships have shifted to more, we text or Facebook message, or they've shifted to a virtual platform, and that doesn't have the same depth. So I think a lot of people's, the quantity of deep relationships they have reduced. And and so in that, when you do experience something hard, what you're grabbing for support and your natural resources is pretty limited. And so things will feel more overwhelming at lower levels than before, because you don't have that.
You bring up such an interesting topic, because it relates to what I was listening to on this podcast this morning. Is this guy was talking about what they've looked into is how important sleep is, at least 6 hours of sleep for people. Mm-hmm. And, Brandon, what he was saying is research is showing that going to bed starts at dinner, and people sleep better who have dinner with other people and start talking, and their family, their friends, they're having conversation. That begins the process of going to sleep, because you're talking about things, you're getting things out, you're having conversations. And, I know the pandemic really bothered my sleep patterns. And just because I'm such a freedom guy that it was so hard for me to be told what to do. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I think this psychoanalyst lady on the podcast was saying too, is, maybe people just need to start being true to who you are. Just be truthful about who you are, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And she says, and just not worry about what other people think about that in terms of social media, and that kind of thing. And I think people, there's a lot of are you seeing a huge rise in anxiety as well?
Oh, big. And I think part of that is you bring up a good point about sleep. And so many people don't get good sleep. It's kind of staggering to hear, you know, as I'm working with people, the percent of them that don't get good sleep. And that's like the cornerstone of processing memories, of filing memories, of reducing likelihood of like traumatic things, because those things all get filed away during REM sleep. And when you're not getting REM sleep, nothing's getting filed away properly. And so sleep is a big part that was, I think, very much disrupted. And a lot, because what happened during the pandemic too is that people were forced to stay at home and socialize via phone and texting and through social media, which means they have their phone in front of their face at an all-time high. I don't know the statistics. I think it'd be very fascinating to see those of like phone usage. I know from my own, I have an iPhone and it will tell me every week, like whether you increase or decrease.
Yeah, yeah. I'm always looking, please go down. I don't want to look like I'm like, you know.
And during that time, mine went way up. And I'm sure everybody else's did, because that was how you were communicating with people. And the problem with that, well, there's lots of reasons. People were doing that late into the night. So it's very disruptive to sleep pattern just because it's stimulating the brain. But also these all use blue lights, which has been shown to be a disruptor of sleep. So you got that in front of your face, even at an increased level over these last many years. And so I think there's lots of things that disrupt sleep, but I think that's becoming more common. Whether it's we're engaged in the wrong type of activities going into the sleep hour, but I like her idea of like starts at five, like, you know, dinner time, and then start doing activities that are kind of winding us down, not stimulating us up.
What about loneliness?
Loneliness. This is, I think, if you were going to put the problem with, I do a lot of work with men's mental health as well. And I think one of the big things is loneliness that guys often won't talk about. Yeah, with men, they won't necessarily talk about it. It's hard to get men to talk about really anything. But when you do, loneliness is a big part. And I think part of that, again, you look not that many years ago, we were doing things side by side, shoulder to shoulder out in the field. We were doing a lot of work individually. And especially through COVID, you know, that's, hey, everybody get us work from home now. And I do a lot of work from home and it is fantastic. I'm not going to lie. But you're by yourself a lot. You don't have the interaction with your coworkers. You're not doing things with buddies. And so there's a statistic that I was reading recently that says if you have, it was like two or three really close friends that I don't remember the specifics, but it was a significant decrease in outcomes. If you experience something traumatic, like legitimately traumatic in your life, and you've got these like three or four close people, the likelihood that you're going to have PTSD as a result and likelihood that's going to be problematic drops astronomically because of those close relationships that you've maintained and that you have that you can talk with. But loneliness for a lot of people that seems about here, especially is a big thing that I see a lot of.
And I would think that, you know, if that would probably be the best step, because I think what happens is we think because we have 100 friends on Facebook that I've got the friends thing down. And those aren't, it's, you have to be more honest when you're one-on-one. Yeah. I mean, you know what I mean? I wouldn't go to you for therapy even. I mean, I know people can do it Zoom and there's all kinds of ways to do it, but I think it would be much more effective if I'm sitting in front of your face because I'm accountable to you.
Yes.
And then here I can say things, but everything around me, I mean, I could be writing a note and, you know, Brandon's an idiot. You know, I mean, you know what I mean? But when I'm sitting there in your room, like when you're looking at me, there's an accountability that I think we not only need, but I think we kind of want it. You know what I mean?
We do. And I would say majority, I do see folks telehealth and some prefer that for various reasons. But the quality is just not even the same. And that's not a surprise because even, you know, if you have a phone call with a friend versus you sitting next to that friend at the lake fishing together, like the quality of that relationship and the conversations that happen are going to be totally different. And even if it's just sitting next to the person, even if you aren't saying any words, has power to it. And so I do agree. I think people are longing for it. They miss it. And I think people are starting to figure it out. So in Wallowa County, we had a extreme rash of suicides that plagued us a couple years ago. We were labeled a hot spot in the state of Oregon. And many of these situations were many people that I knew, and many of them were lonely people. And I do think that was an direct result of the pandemic and many of these cases. And what's interesting is we've that's really paused significantly, which has been good to see. And also just working with people, I think they're starting to get back into doing groups and engaging and back in the community. But a lot of that's like pushing and prodding. I have to push and prod my clients like, hey, your work this week is to like go back to that group you used to be a part of, or start going to in church, like in person again, or start going out and having coffee with that friend again. And it's been a lot of prodding, but those that have done it have really enjoyed it and found a lot of benefit again from it. So
I heard someone online the other day saying, in fact, I think it was Jordan Peterson actually in a podcast. And he said, you know, not in these words, but basically what he was saying is one of the biggest problems we have is we are so consumed with how we feel right now that he said, if you take that concern off of yourself to some degree and start taking care of other people, he says it does wonders for you because, you know, I think we get hyper-focused. And when you're alone, you tend to get more hyper-focused because there's only you. And then how the world's impacting you rather than going out and saying, but what about Mrs. Johnson, who's next door? I wonder if I took some stuff over to her, sat with her for a while, gave her a meal, mow her lawn, you know, start doing little things for other people. I'm looking for just ways. I think there's a bunch of people where, you know, we're ready to get back into life. And I think there's a group of folks out there just like, oh, get over it. It happened and get over it. But then there's a group of other people like myself who are like, no, I haven't heard I'm sorry. I haven't heard anyone say that what they did was wrong. And I'm having trouble letting go of some of that stuff because there needs to be some accountability here, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's where my problem comes in. You know what I mean? Where it's like that whole thing.
Yeah. And, you know, when you talked about, getting back out with people and what we're seeing there, I mean, just the value that happens when we are sitting next to somebody and with somebody and when we're by ourselves, like you said, all we're doing is thinking about our own problems, our own issues, it's just us. And the problem is in so much of our culture right now, all the books are self-help books. How do you, all about you and your wellness and what's good for you. And there's nothing wrong with self-care and taking care of ourselves. That's great. But studies will show that one of the better ways to fight depression is to go out and do something for somebody else.
Yeah.
If you want to feel better, and part of it is it releases dopamine. It releases oxytocin, all these bonding chemicals and feel-good chemicals when we're with other people doing something for somebody else. And so I think that's part of it. We need to start getting out of our own heads and our own space and our own little closed-off worlds and start helping the neighbor shovel his yard that, you know, is an older guy and might need some help, or the single widowed lady, you know, like we need to be looking for those opportunities because that does help us. It rebuilds community that used to be there that really through the pandemic, it has paused that. And we were told to pause that. And there's never been a clear message of re-engage. You know, there's big shut off.
That's a great point, Brandon. It's never been
a nation. Let's re-engage in each other's lives again. There's not been that.
No, and there's always headlines that seem to tint that, oh, more hospitals are requiring masks. And, you know, not that that's bad. I'm just saying, but that's all we hear. It's like, so I feel like maybe you just helped me with something. I think culturally we have not allowed, there hasn't been a reset button where it's been like, okay, we put you on pause. And now it's like it pause off, because always a little threat from the media out here saying, oh, is it going to come back? Is JN4 going to be worse than, you know, DN6 or whatever the hell it was? And so there's always this little COVID fairy up here, you know, holding the magic wand, you're just waiting for the thing to fall. And maybe it's like we need the world or the culture to be able to say, okay, guess what? We've got to start living again. And we can't be living under the threat of that this is coming back, because that would be like living, you know, we've had pandemics in the past, the Spanish flu. Well, 10 years later, it's not coming back. We need to move on from this. If it comes back, we'll deal with it, but we need to move on. And people just can't.
You know, it is true. Like, I think there was, you know, thinking at the beginning, it was like, okay, 2 weeks, this is just for 2 weeks.
That's what I thought.
I'm like, cool, 2 weeks, I can do that. And then it was like, okay, this is extended now for a few more weeks. And then all of a sudden, there's just this ongoing, and then coming back into like what, you know, normal or new normal or whatever you want to consider it, there's never been like a clear message of saying like, hey, like, yeah, it's here. Like, it's not going away. It's always going to be part of our lives forever. Just like different flus are, just like various illnesses are. It's another one in the list that is there.
Right.
And we have to get back to engaging with each other, living life. And that message, I have not ever heard that just clearly saying, hey, America, we need to start engaging with relationships again. Go see your neighbors. Like, don't be afraid of them. There needs to be some real clear messaging and permission, I guess. I think some people almost feel like they need permission to be free of all these mandates saying don't for years. So all of a sudden now, like, there's just no more pressure saying don't, but there's not an encouragement of saying get back out there and let's rebuild these relationships.
Right, because I even saw headlines around the holidays where CDC or people were, you know, officials were saying, you know, if you're, you know, stupid stuff to me, like if you're sick, don't go to your family's vacation, you know, wedding or Christmas party or something, which shouldn't that always be the standard? Yes. You know what I mean? I hate when people walk in. Oh yeah, we've had this crud. Welcome. Oh, well, thanks. We'll take our potluck elsewhere, you know?
Right?
But yeah, that's really that, Brandon, that's really good. I think just, you know, just for each one of us in our own lives is to be able to say, no, I'm not going to keep living under the threat of this is here. It's like any other influenza or a cold or whatever else we have. And yes, if you're more susceptible to that, the other thing I was a little surprised from mentally surprised by the whole reaction to the thing was, you know, the biggest comorbidity was being overweight. Mm-hmm. Perfect opportunity for the country to go on a, you know, the best thing you could do for yourself was lose 20, 30, 40 pounds. And here's a perfect opportunity to go to the people and say, how we eat is putting you at risk. That Lay's potato chip bag that you ate 2.5 of before, you know, you had your beers, that's putting you at risk of this as much as anything else. So as a nation, let's get healthy. And it's like, and nothing. It was the same old thing. Take a pill and get better. Take a pill and get better. When what you have to teach people is, yes, sometimes there's medication that can help with mental illness and other things, but it's hard damn work to put your life in order.
It is, you know, and I think, you know, a lot of the work I did with people through that time was really like, what can you do? You know, you can't control all this other stuff happening.
Right. And
you can waste a lot of energy. Like, what can you do? Mother Teresa said it really well. She said, if you want to change the world, go home and love your family.
Yeah.
And I thought about that a lot, you know, and just thinking about, hey, if you want to change your community of those around you, go home and hug on your neighbor and go check on your neighbor, like broaden that out a little bit. But really that's it. And that's what we need to get back to. And I agree, like there's a lot of things people could have done. Like, you know, they shut down gyms. They, you know, it was like everybody was stress eating and like all these things that were like exact opposite, you know, yeah, like losing 20 pounds, getting yourself out of the obesity BMI. And like, because statistically, I think it was like 78 or plus percent of people that were hospitalized because of COVID were obese.
Yeah.
And I think that was a big, you know, if you're going into this unhealthy and then you get any illness, like no matter what it is, it's going to be way worse for you than if you're an overall healthy person. So the best thing we can do is like exercise, eat well, socialize, like all these things that create good health. And those were all things that were paused for the most part. And so I think it kind of set people up to fail in a lot of ways, whether that's purposeful or just a secondary result of decisions.
Right. So you think then, so people struggling with this stuff, if you're, you know, loneliness, and at first, I guess it's admitting that you're lonely and sad, you know, and then find ways to fill that void, because sitting in front of the TV at night by yourself is not going to do it. And the sweet, cool thing is your neighbors are probably just as lonely as you are.
Yeah. I get back to having like the, you know, having somebody over for dinner once a week, you know, any activity that we're doing virtually that we can do in person, like, and it's being offered, like, go back to being in person again. Because part of it is people have become uncomfortable being around other people, which is not surprising. We've isolated people for years, and then we're surprised that they don't want to get back together. Like, there is an anxiety that is there now to be too close to other people. And, like, and you still see it in people in, like, crowded, more crowded areas, grocery stores. There's just, like, a people have a bigger bubble around them than they used to. And so there's kind of a fear that I see in people as well, with just like a social anxiety that's developed. Not even fear like I'm going to get sick because I'm close to you. It's just more like just socially going out and being around people. That's been another increase too, just thinking about it, of things that I'm helping people with, is just going out and being around other human beings is stressful to them at this point. And so kind of starting with little things and kind of doing a mild, you know, conversion therapy.
So Brandon, how is kind of wrapping up is if people are looking, if they're stuck, how do you find someone like you that you can sit in front of person to person? What does somebody look for? Go ahead and answer that. And then I'm going to go back to the social media psychotherapists. But answer that. How does people...
It's kind of hard to find a good therapist. And you know, I saw one several years ago. I was a crisis worker for years and just needed somebody to talk to. And it took me four different ones to finally find one. I'm like, hey, like, you get me. And some of them just weren't listening. Some would talk the entire time about their experiences. I'm like, am I providing you therapy, or are you providing me therapy? I don't know. It was kind of weird.
Right.
Finally found a gal, and she was really great and helpful. Some of the resources, like Psychology Today is a website you can go to, and you can like put in like, I want a female or a male. I want them to be conservative. I want them to be, you know, a certain religion. Like, you can kind of narrow down. So when I created my page, I get to put like, you know, I like to work with like, I'm a Christian therapist. I'm a conservative. I do work with men. And so when people, you know, if you have kind of specific things you want to kind of make sure that you have in a therapist, because when you think about it, like, faith, where you land politically,
right,
all these things really do change worldviews.
Right.
And it's really, if you are on the opposite polar opposite side of your therapist and worldview, it's going to impact significantly your experience in therapy. And so I think it's good to verify, like, I had a client the other day, and he verified a bunch of worldview things with me. He wanted to know what my thoughts were on a bunch of things. And so, you know, and I think that's good, because we need to kind of align our worldviews, because it does significantly change things.
But. Yeah, because I had a business coach, and right in the middle of the pandemic hit, and the way I took it was probably more like what you're taking it. And she was on the opposite end of the spectrum, and it became really uncomfortable. And it's sad, because we had a really good relationship before that. But that should have been a question I probably dealt with sooner about, you know, where I fall in my politics and that kind of thing, because it ruined the relationship, because, you know, all of a sudden you're thrust into this thing where it's like, I'm thinking this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life. And no, I'm not doing this. Whereas total opposite extreme. So it became really uncomfortable. But yeah, so find someone who lines up, not so they'll tell you what you want to hear, because you don't tell people what they want to hear.
I challenge people's beliefs. I feel like that's one of my main things I do. They're coming to me because their belief systems are leading them in a way that is not getting them where they want to be in life. And so I look at their beliefs and we challenge them. And I think that's kind of what it should look like.
You love what you do, huh?
I do.
Because aren't people just absolutely amazing?
They are. And, you know, I'm sitting here looking, I got these two diagnostic manuals sitting in front of me, the DSM-5 and the DSM-5-TR, like the revised. And it is amazing how many diagnoses are in this, yet every client I have is very different, you know, and what has brought them to a diagnosis. And so it is fascinating to hear people's stories and what they've been through, and helping them get back on track to where they want to be in life. It's pretty fun.
And you know, I did therapy when I was in my 30s, and you know, just having some dad issues and things like that doing. And it was the most awesome time in my life, because for me too, as a follower of Christ, I felt closer to God. Mm-hmm. Because I felt like we were, like he was going, okay, this is what I want you to do. And I want you to find this out. Go back and let's start this part over. Can we want to reset? And I just love that term, because it was almost like with a computer, you know, yes, the memories are still there somewhere in that computer, but I can keep hitting that reset button to go, you know, I got to start this over again.
Yep.
And my therapist said, you can do that every single day.
Yeah.
And I was like, so every day I would get up and go, okay, we're resetting. What happened yesterday does not have to impact. I can let it or not let it impact what happens today.
Yep.
Exactly. Just asking yourself, you know, telling yourself that when this lady said it this morning, tell yourself the truth. I thought, God, that's profound. Because how many of us lie to ourselves about, and you get on social media and you got all these hacks who are telling you, you know, that what your mental illness is, and they're telling you, you know, if you have the perfect body, you will be 100% different. I've never seen, I looked up protein powder one day, and then I started getting reels about dudes with their shirts off, you know, showing them. There are not this many men who run around with their shirts off all the time in the kitchen, and their wives are going, oh, baby, you know, like, what is this world? What, you know, who are I? Who am I really? And what do I want and out of my life? And I think when we as people start getting honest with that, not worrying about who's going to like us or not like us, because, you know, the people that we build those relationships with will probably be there even when, you know, we don't deserve it. But, you know, the fickle public, you know, I learned this with my life. As soon as I was Rick Dancer on the news, everybody, oh, Rick, he's such a nice guy. So I quit. First, I ran as a Republican for Secretary of State. Then that was really hard for my left-leaning, you know, community. People come up and go, you're the first Republican I ever voted for. And I was thankful because I understood that was a big deal to them. But I thought, wow, that's kind of shocking, you know. And then, and then when COVID hit and some of that, I really came out strong going, this just doesn't seem like something I'm going to do. And people just turned on me like you would not believe. And that lady said this on this thing this morning. She said, you know, this is not about that. Because she said it really interesting. She said, as soon as people find out you're not the you that they thought you were, that's when you make that break. And it was a real break where it was like, you know, really hard. And now it's to the point where it's like, nah, this is who I am. You know, this is, so it's called Get Real with Rick Dancer. You know, we're trying to get real with people every day.
And I think it's good because we all have something to offer. And it's one of the things that as a social worker, I've built, and one of the reasons I named it Bearded Social Worker, because it is not a traditional name you would think to hear, because how my approach is slightly different. And I reach a demographic of people who would not traditionally get services, like men, for example, law enforcement, first responders, contractors. Like, these are guys that are not going to typically go sit down and talk to a therapist.
Right.
So I shift it differently. I approach it differently so that these guys feel like they can come in and more of counseling. I look at, there's a difference between therapy and counseling. You know, counseling is like bouncing ideas off me, giving feedback to ideas, and we kind of counsel if you want to, you know, approach. Works really well. And, but if I was just to say, I'm just going to do what everybody else does and just kind of follow that, then these people that I'm reaching right now would not be able to be reached.
Right.
And so I think it's good to be yourself, find out what you're passionate about. And that's it. And there's going to be certainly people who disagree, and that's great. And that's one of the neat things about being a human, is we can have our own opinions and those can be different, and that's okay. That's good.
So I don't have to look at ink blots.
No ink blots.
I think that is the funniest thing.
It's like some rifle coffee, though. If you want some good coffee, man, we got good coffee here, though.
So, and you get to go to Wallowa County.
And you get it. You can't be, I don't know how you can be mad looking up at these mountains that are sitting out here. They're just gorgeous. And like, you know.
Yeah, when you look at the Oregon Swiss Alps, and you know, you're looking at the Wallowa Mountains, and there is nothing prettier in Oregon than that.
It is a beautiful place, especially in the fall when the tamaracks are all turning on the mountains. And it's a very beautiful place
anytime. And you guys have, like, because we did, I think we did two or three, probably three or four shows. We used to do a show called Exploring and the backstories for Toyota. And we came, so we'd stay in, we'd like staying in Enterprise more than Joseph. Nothing against Joseph, but Enterprise is more like a town.
Yes, and Joseph was a tourist destination for the most part. And
yeah.
Enterprise, we don't have a lot of touristy stuff. It's just enjoy the pace of life.
But you get just real people, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That just tell you the truth. We went to Naha to the store and they all, we just walked in with the camera rolling and they're like, can I talk to you? And they go, we don't care. What do you want to talk about? Who are you? So we start talking. And then they said, well, if you want a really beautiful view, you got to drive up to China Hat. And I went, how hard is that? And they said, oh, you'll never make it. So we went up there, we did. And I got down and I said, I won't ever do that again. That's a sketchy road. And it was an hour and a half drive, but it was absolutely stunningly beautiful. And I went back into the store and told all of them, hey, you know the wussy news guy? Yeah, I made it to the top and I've got video to prove it. So there, you know?
Like it.
Hey, Brandon, thank you so much for spending some time with us. If you think of a topic that becomes really relevant to you, like that people are talking about, give me a call. I'll put you on any time. I think I'd like to get to know you better. And especially since we kind of have that faith in the mind, maybe there's something we can do to help people to give them real good advice about anxiety. Or, you know, you come up with a topic, you just let me know. It doesn't cost you anything. I got sponsors who pay for this. So we're, you know, our last Facebook numbers for 28 days, we just reached 1 million people. So
that's awesome.
Love to have you come on and really help, because I think people are desperate just to know that it's okay.
Yes. I think that's a big thing. It's okay to not be okay. And that's all right.
Yeah. It's kind of the human condition, actually. I don't know that we ever get okay till we're done with this place.
No. And I think that's okay. Like we can be, and it may not be where we want to be, but we'll be, and that's okay.
Yeah.
And I think we can get through a lot more than we think we can.
So that old song by Doris Day, the que sera, sera, whatever will be, it's right. Still
means, like Beatles, let it be.
Yeah. This has been around. We just never caught the hints.
No, for years.
I'm convinced that God speaks through the Beatles and all kinds of rock music that Christians are afraid to listen to. And I'm going, you've never listened to heavy metal. There's a message there, baby.
It is there.
Brandon Miller, the bearded social worker. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you, Rick.
All right. See you later. So that's what it's all about. Wallowa County. You guys, stuff is going on everywhere, all over the place, and you just got to look for it. So yeah, hopefully we can get Brandon back and maybe we'll just do a whole show on anxiety and what people can do for that and loneliness. Give you some ideas. You know, you don't have to go to therapy, but we can counsel each other, right? I mean, that's kind of like what being friends is all about, right? I mean, I need to be around people more. I learned that from Brandon today. I learned two things from the psychiatrist this morning is, you know, I just got to be true to who I am. And I need to get around human beings because I spend too much time online working and I need to rub elbows and touch people. There's something about touching skin, you know, and a handshake. I don't fist bump. I don't want, what is that shit? That's like pandemic, dumb stuff. When you grab some guy's hand and you shake it and you squeeze it, you know how tough they are. You know what they do for a living. You feel calluses in their hands. You just know who people are. And just so to warn you, I am a big time hugger. Oh, I will hug you and make you so uncomfortable, but you won't be lonely. All right. Thanks for joining us. Share this on your page. Let other people know because there's good stuff in here. All right. We'll see you later. Bye-bye.